From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
Duckworth is blocking more than 1,000 military promotions to try to protect impeachment witness Lieutenant Colonel Alexander Vindman, and that as the senator is picking up buzz as a potential running mate for Vice President Joe Biden. Should statues, for example, of George Washington come down?
Well, let me just say that we should start off by having a national dialogue on it. What really struck me about the speech that the president gave at Mount Rushmore was that he spent more time worried about honoring dead Confederates than he did talking about the lives of our the 130,000 Americans who lost their lives to COVID-19, or by warning Russia off of the bounty they're putting on Americans' heads.
Keep in mind, Tammy Duckworth is not a child, at least not technically. She is a sitting United States Senator who is often described as a hero. Yet Duckworth is too afraid to defend her own statements on a cable TV show. What a coward.
U.S. Senator Tammy Duckworth is the junior senator from Illinois, but she's been getting all the headlines in the past few weeks. She made a highly publicized decision to block Pentagon appointments, then an appearance on CNN where her comments on taking down statues of George Washington did not set well with conservatives like Fox News' Tucker Carlson. Now, she did say later she didn't want George Washington's statue to be pulled down, but already the criticism was coming in there. And of course, she's being mentioned as a potential running mate for Joe Biden. Also, removing statues in Illinois. The Illinois House Speaker makes an announcement on that. We'll talk about it all and more coming up on State Week. I'm Sean Crawford in Springfield, and our panel, practicing social distancing once again from his home, we have Charlie Wheeler, emeritus professor and former director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. He's also a longtime State House reporter and observer. Also with us from his home, Bill Wheelhouse, back reporting for public radio stations in Illinois. And our guest this week is Lynn Sweet, columnist and Washington Bureau Chief for the Chicago Sun-Times. And Lynn, it's good to have you on with us.
Well, thank you so much. And hello, everyone.
Lynn, I'm going to start with you. We heard some of what was said there, some of this kerfuffle that's been going on in the news over the last week or so involving Tammy Duckworth, the criticism from Tucker Carlson. What has been the senator's response?
Well, the senator's strongest response came in a New York Times op-ed posted on Thursday night. And the comeback is that these titanium legs don't buckle, a reference in a pithy way to the two legs she lost in combat when her helicopter that she was in as a member of the Illinois Army National Guard near Baghdad, Iraq, in 2004 was shot down. So this is a argument ostensibly over statues, but really having to do with a lot more in the way that Tucker Carlson framed it and had his attacks leveled at Tammy Duckworth, because it wasn't just about should we keep George Washington's statue up or down, let's discuss. He attacked her personally and in thinly veiled racial terms, and later those attacks were repeated or echoed by the Trump election campaign and by Trump himself, who retweeted some of Carlson's attacks on Duckworth. So one of the things that Duckworth tweeted immediately after the first attack from Carlson on his Fox show Monday night, she tweeted, "Does Carlson, quote, want to walk a mile in my legs and then tell me whether or not I love America," close quote. So what you have here is a strategy to demonize and make an other, make as other, people who disagree with these symbolic arguments that Trump and now Carlson are trying to make.
Now, Lynn, you wrote also that Duckworth had said, you know, she won't be swift-boated. That was a reference to what happened with John Kerry when some former veterans came out discrediting his military record when he ran for president. Do you see a similar scenario here?
Well, actually, I said it.
I'm sorry.
You know, I didn't talk to her, and she said, "I won't be swift-boated." That was my... I resurrected that term, and people may not remember it because it started in 2004, and even among our listeners, we may have a new generation who weren't around then. I wanted to explain what was going on and why this worked in 2004. 2024, but may not in 2020. So when Kerry was vilified in 2004, and it worked for a while, it took a while to show how baseless the attacks were on Kerry over his record as a swift boat commander and his later activities. And at the time, swift boating entered the political lexicon as being these very, it's more than mudslinging here, because mudslinging could have an element of a truthful attack that you're bringing up. So I realized what is happening here is the 2020 version of swift boating. So that's why I put that word in, and I think it will stick in the New York Times op-ed, actually, that Tammy wrote. She did mention about being swift-boated. So I think that term now, with this episode, is coming back in its 2020 form.
Charlie, let me get your thoughts on this. You've seen a lot of political attacks through the years. What are your thoughts on the one that's going on right now against Senator Duckworth?
Well, I think that it's totally unfair. And for one thing, I find it kind of ironic that someone is questioning her patriotism, particularly someone who did not serve in the military and who went to great lengths to avoid having to serve in the military, someone referred to as Cadet Bone Spurs. For him to denigrate the service of someone like Tammy Duckworth, I think is reprehensible. Now, you can criticize her and you can say, I don't like her positions on X, Y, and Z issues. I don't think she was a good administrator when she ran the Veteran Affairs here in Illinois. But to attack her personally, I think that's just outrageous. And particularly coming from folks who don't have that kind of background that she does in terms of military service. As a matter of fact, someone, I think it was a comment I saw on Rich Miller's website, somebody pointed out that, well, maybe the President Trump doesn't like war heroes. He doesn't consider a war hero if you've lost both your legs. And a takeoff on the remark that he made about John McCain, that he liked war heroes better who weren't prisoners of war.
Well, that's a good point, Charlie. And I want to underscore, though, what is happening here is that in addition to just talking about her as a wounded Iraq war vet, you have the obvious that she is an Asian American. Her father, she was born in Bangkok. Her father was an American citizen who was working there at the time. Her mother is Thai of Chinese descent. The way Tucker Carlson framed it on TV, where visual counts. You know, he put up a picture of her and a black member of Congress to talk about saving our culture. This is it's not even thinly veiled racism just to do this. So you have so much going on in one way why Tammy Duckworth has not been attacked by Trump up until now, and it's still noteworthy that as we speak, Trump has not given her a nickname and has not gone after her personally. Now, who knows if that will last? I also want to be a little contrarian here. Some people have, I noticed in reports and analyses other reporters and journalists have done, they said, oh, this is part of her auditioning to be Joe Biden's running mate. She is in the running for it, and she's raising her profile. And I disagree. These are things that the senator would be doing no matter what when these issues come up. She is a lawmaker who has embraced military and veterans issues. And,
yeah, from her first day in Congress.
Right. So as it with everybody, she has a long record. If you want to revisit her tenure as the head of the VA in Illinois, that's fair. If a journalist wants to take the time to do their own research, there were some issues that came up when she ran against Mark Kirk. If you then want to evaluate her tenure when she was a high-ranking Obama appointee in the Veterans Administration, she knows that's fair. And it also is fair to disagree with her and her views about statues. You know, Adam Kinzinger put up a thing in a post on Facebook about it. But that's reasonable, as she points out in her op-ed in the New York Times. That's why you fight in America. That's what the military does, so you can have these discussions. If Tucker Carlson had said, oh, Tammy Duckworth seems to want a national dialogue on statues, you know, she should have just come out and said, you got to save George Washington. That's reasonable. But when you make it personal, I mean, can you imagine right now, Charlie, if I disagreed with you and I said, well, Charlie, you're a moron, what good does that do?
No, I don't recall you ever having said that to me.
No, I mean, that's juvenile. That's what little kids do. And that's what, and I've known Tucker Carlson for years, and his earlier incarnations as an MSNBC host, I would be on his show all the time. You had discussions on the merits of the issues. That's why you had people come on who covered stuff. For him to have to resort to insults to make an argument is also unbecoming for him.
Well, we'll continue to watch this situation play out and also watch Tammy Duckworth again. She is on the national stage at this point, and as Lynn mentioned, there has been considered or is in consideration as a running mate for Joe Biden. I want to move on to Governor J.B. Pritzker. He also was talking to a congressional committee this week, the House Committee on Homeland Security, and a bill Governor Pritzker testifying, arguing for a national mask mandate and coordinated strategy. Again, repeating a lot of the same things we've heard him say before. He's not happy with the federal government's response to the pandemic. He continued to drive that home this week.
He did, and it's kind of interesting. He has never called for that statewide in Illinois specifically, or at least putting a mandate on it. Keeps staying away from mandates, but when given the chance to attack Washington a little bit and the Trump administration, he did take full advantage, saying there should be a national mask movement.
Charlie, this is something the governor, you know, I think he does believe this. I think he is sincere in his criticism of the federal government here, but it also plays well with his base also, doesn't it?
Well, I guess the public opinion polls show that people agree with him that he's taken many of the correct steps. And when you look at what happened in some of the other states that opened up and relaxed whatever restrictions they had or didn't put any on in the first place, and you look at how the virus has exploded in places like Arizona or Florida or Texas, Governor Pritzker looks pretty good. And I think in my mind, it's common sense to wear a mask. And not wearing a mask, I think it was the bagel shop in Chicago that had a sign saying, if you don't want to wear a mask, walk 40 feet to your left and look in the window and see the reflection of the only person you care about. Because you don't wear a mask so much to protect yourself as you do to protect others who you might infect unwittingly, not knowing that you're a carrier. And I think, in my mind, the more we learn about this virus, the more frightening it becomes. The fact that it can affect people's brains, for example, or the fact that it can affect your blood system. It's more than just a more severe case of the flu, as some people initially said. So I think the governor's done a pretty good job, and I think the numbers in Illinois bear that out when you look at what happens in other states.
I don't think there was any real impact from him saying this. It was a remote testimony for a House committee hearing. I'm not sure how much attention it really got in the scheme of things. And he was calling for something that he has not forced in Illinois.
You're listening to State Week. I'm Sean Crawford, and our panel includes Charlie Wheeler, Bill Wheelhouse, and Lynn Sweet of the Chicago Sun-Times. Well, also came up this week, the Treasury Department and Small Business Administration released the names of some of the employers who are getting Paycheck Protection Program loans. That's part of what the federal government provided in the CARES Act. Lynn, you wrote about this. What did we learn from some of the names that were released?
Well, we learned that more than 200,000 employers in Illinois took advantage of this loan, and that's telling because it shows that when you offer people free money, they're going to take it, or essentially free money. So we learned that the category, it's not just one name that stands out. So politically, actually, let me do one name because it's a political connection. Jim Oberweis, who is a state senator, who is the chairman of Oberweis Berry, who is running for a House seat in the 14th District against freshman Rep. Warren Underwood. His company got a $5.7 million loan from the PPP to keep there. Now, we're just highlighting it. It saved the jobs. They had to attest of employees. But it's newsworthy when somebody who's running for Congress does take advantage to that level of a loan.
And that's a good point. He is running for office, of course. So you know, again, it's worth writing about in that sense. But there are also some positives, I would think, with this money, because as you mentioned, it did help a lot of these employers keep people paid during, especially the downtimes of this pandemic.
Sure. And in disclosure, the Chicago Sun-Times, I'm sorry, by the way, for Oberweis, it was $5.6 million, not $5.7 million. It helped many employers in the state, including the Chicago Sun-Times. So the thrust of the program was to give this money out to employers, and this started when no one knew how deep the COVID pandemic would hit economically. And restaurants were closed. Mandatory shutdowns were in place. Revenues dried up for many businesses. Now what we're going to find out, of course, is did everybody who got it really need it? But that's another thing. But companies up to 500 employees are eligible for the money. And if you use it as intended, which is to cover payroll and some operating expenses, you can get the money.
Now, is that this what was released? This disclosure. This is not everybody who got this money, though, right? Only up to a certain funding level is what was made public.
Well, but made public were loans over $1 million, and so then there are other questions. Of course, why is it fair if you're? So this is one of the most hastily put together, chaotic programs that I've ever covered, or that many in government have ever seen, to shovel this much money this fast out the door with very little thought as to the true ramifications. So does a company whose CEO makes $1 million, they get treated the same way as a company where the CEO makes $150,000 and they get the same generous terms? A company that's publicly traded that might have other access to cash or might have cash reserves got money in the same way as a entity whose revenues dried up. But whether or not you're a small hotel or a big hotel, a big restaurant or a small restaurant, we know those businesses had their revenues cut off drastically and swiftly, and they employ people no matter what the executives make.
Let me go back to the topic of statues, because that has come up as well this week. The Speaker, Michael Madigan, Illinois House Speaker, did make an announcement that he wants to remove a Stephen Douglas statue and a Pierre Menard statue on the Capitol grounds, also get rid of a portrait of Douglas in the Illinois House chambers. What did the Speaker have to say about this bill? You were covering that.
Well, the Speaker mentioned he'd been reading a book related to some of the Lincoln and Civil War history, and that really learned a lot more about Douglas through the years and the tie-in to slavery and Douglas's beliefs that each territory should have its own say at the time on slavery issues. So he issued the call yesterday and said, come fall, the Illinois House will vote on whether to remove the portrait of Douglas that hangs in the Illinois House, and that would be replaced by former President Barack Obama. And then he moved to statues outside the Capitol, the Capitol landscape dotted with many statues. But there was the Douglas statue and then the Pierre Menard statue. Menard was the first lieutenant governor, and the statue that's out there has him standing above a Native American. And so I think it was a surprise for many that House Speaker Madigan called on the architect for the Capitol and a board, which he has a lot of influence over, to remove those. And that could happen fairly soon should the board vote its way. That wouldn't have to wait till the fall. He also, in removing those statues, wants to take a statue from across the street near the state library of Martin Luther King Jr., move that to a more prominent location. And then he called for a continued look at icons, symbols, statues all throughout the Capitol grounds. I think the deeper part of this is the issue was probably going to come up. Some people had raised the issue. Speaker Madigan doing this takes heat off lawmakers of all stripes, really. No particular lawmaker has to call for a statue removal now. Nobody has to fight it unless they choose to. It's an example where Speaker Madigan puts the load on his shoulder, obviously feeling pretty comfortable he'll be reelected in the fall, and takes the heat for an issue that individual members could have caught more of a divide with voters.
Charlie, I want to get your thoughts on this. Stephen Douglas, I mean, the statues, the tributes there have been around a long time, and he's been a source of, you know, a target of criticism for a long period as well. So why now? What's the, you know, why did the speaker move at this point?
Well, I think it's kind of a reflection of the national dialogue going on about how do we honor people who played an important role in the founding of the country, but who also had some views and attitudes that we find reprehensible today. Stephen Douglas, for example, in the Lincoln-Douglas debates, Lincoln basically was advocating for the notion that all people are created equally. Douglas, on the other hand, wanted to put the question of slavery up to a popular vote, and in one of the debates he said, the government was made by our fathers on the white basis, made by white men for the benefit of white men and their posterity forever. And so, as Bill mentioned, Douglas married the daughter of a Southern colonel who had a plantation in Mississippi with slaves. He had inherited when his father-in-law died, and he hired a manager to work it and use part of the profits to finance his candidacies for various offices. Ironically, Douglas was born in Vermont, and he became a defender of the right of the southern states to have slaves and incoming territories to have slaves if they wanted them. Lincoln, who was born in Kentucky, was an abolitionist, a fighter against slavery. Menard was he was French. He came down from Canada when Illinois was a territory belonging to France. As a fur trader, he set up office in Kaskaskia. He was the head of the territorial government in Indiana. He was a delegate when we were part of Indiana. He was head of the territorial government when we were Illinois territory. And he was the first lieutenant governor. And the biographers say that the reason he was chosen as the lieutenant governor was to placate the French-speaking population in Illinois at the time, and had Shadrach Bond, who was of English descent, English speaking, as the governor. Menard himself had slaves. He had, according to the census in the census of 1820, he had 13 slaves. In 1830, he had 22, and there is no evidence that he ever emancipated any of them. And he died in 1844, and slavery was not finally abolished in Illinois until the Constitution of 1848. So for the first 30 years of our statehood, we allowed slavery. Now, it was couched in the terms of indentured servitude, but it was basically slavery.
I just want about a minute or so left here. Lynn, I want to go to you on something that came up after we recorded last week's show. We did mention this, that Governor Pritzker was able to win a federal lawsuit against him that was filed by the Illinois Republican Party. This had to do with crowd restrictions and COVID-19. They wanted to have, you know, this ban on political events when it comes to, you know, large gatherings. And after that, the Illinois Republican Party decided to make an emergency appeal, but they were turned down. Can you fill us in about, again, about 30 seconds or so?
I'll do it real quick. This was a dramatic collection of appeals over the 4th of July weekend from the Seventh Circuit in Chicago to the Supreme Court. The emergency was pegged on the need of Will County Republicans to know if they could have their 4th of July picnic. There's always a Supreme Court judge on duty to handle emergencies. In this case, it was Justice Kavanaugh, and without comment, he declined to take up the appeal.
All right, it's time now for our notes from the field, and Charlie, let's go to you.
Okay, well, kind of catching up on something I said last week, in which I was mistaken, when we talked about a ruling by a Clay County judge dealing with the same issue, the governor's executive orders, I said that, well, he's a Clay County judge, so it would only apply in Clay County. Because he's a full circuit judge, it would apply throughout the Fourth Circuit, which is Clay County and eight other counties in south central Illinois. And the ones closest to Springfield would be Christian County and Montgomery County, where Hillsborough is.
All right. And Bill?
Sometimes when you're in this business and somebody else writes a good line, you just go, I wish I would have thought of that. And I have to give a shout out to the Sun-Times, Tina Sfondelis, for her article on the statue issue, saying her lead sentence in the story was that the Velvet Hammer is taking a swing at the Little Giant, and that's referring to the nicknames of Speaker Madigan, the Velvet Hammer, and Stephen Douglas, the Little Giant. And I just thought that writing deserved an honor.
And Lynn?
Here's my note, that the shifting ground on whether or not Republicans from Illinois will really want to go to the convention in Jacksonville in August as Florida records soaring rates of the coronavirus pandemic.
That's all the time we have for State Week. Our panel included Charlie Wheeler, Bill Wheelhouse, and Lynn Sweet with the Chicago Sun-Times. You can get a podcast of our show. It's available at nprillinois.org or through the NPR One app. Production assistance for the program was provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Sean Crawford.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capital by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.